This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is broke right now.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. And this evening, we are turning our attention to pastoral romance cinema.
We certainly are tonight. So, absolutely. I've got my denim shirt on and I'm ready to rock this place now.
No flannel?
Well, I thought more your kind of Levi denim, especially, you know, when we're thinking Brokeback, you know, Mountain and that gorgeous scene with the denim shirt at the... Anyway, Daniel, for those playing at home, pastoral romance cinema. Now, that's a bit of a stretch. Do you want to kind of help the audience with what we actually mean by pastoral romance cinema? What is it?
I think we can be quite broad in our definition of what pastoral romance is.
So is it what? Something set in the countryside?
That's right. So Okay. Kind of envisage rolling hills.
Rolling hills. They don't have to be herding livestock, sheep.
Well, I think they probably could be. So a pastoral traditionally is a work of a kind... Well, it comes from a kind of Greek literature.
Oh, I should know then.
It depicts life in a kind of idealized manner, in the kind of sprawling countryside.
Yeah.
And it usually involves people kind of herding sheep or horses or, you know, some kind of farm-style work.
Okay.
But I think the way that we're going to approach pastoral romance this evening, a pastoral film is really any film that deals with the countryside and I think uses the countryside as a way of informing the internal emotional state of the protagonist in the film. And if you think about films like Brokeback Mountain, which as queer audiences might be the first kind of pastoral romance that we think of, this is a film that really does use the landscape to inform the way that the characters are feeling. Not only is the landscape a kind of critical character in the film, really. Brokeback Mountain is, of course, the site of Jack and Ennis's romance, but it also kind of informs their emotional turmoil and that kind of strange... it's kind of barren.
Isolated. It's more that isolation,
yeah,
I think it is.
Which is really what Brokeback Mountain is in many ways about. It's about, at one time, isolation, but at the same time, it's also about the kind of castrating, truncating effects of onlookers, really.
Which was something Ang Lee does very well in exploring those kind of isolating relationships. So Brokeback Mountain, I think... It's also the time it was set and the way that story was told, which is a little bit different than the film that we're looking at tonight with... Well, is it? Is it though?
Well, I think that's something that we're going to explore over the course of the evening. So, of course, the reason that we're turning our attention to pastoral romance this evening...
Denim shirts, denim on denim.
...is because... God's Own Country, which screened at MIFF earlier this month, has had its theatrical release... and it's now showing in cinemas around the country, which I think is fantastic. So great to see a film like this having a broader theatrical release. But it is, of course, a pastoral romance. So this is a film about love that kind of flourishes on the countryside.
And looking at its press release also, it has been compared, Daniel, with Brokeback Mountain.
In fact, Esquire said it's Brokeback Mountain, but better.
Ooh.
So the comparison is being made right across the board. Some people are saying it's better than Brokeback Mountain. I think that's up for debate. And, I think it's a great film and I really do encourage our listeners to go along and see it. So I'm not going to say which film I think is better. But I
can see the similarities.
Well,
we can talk about that later.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, I think that it's really useful to kind of compare these films because they differ in some really interesting ways and they have a lot of things in common, which is also really interesting. But at the same time, I think that it's perhaps not so productive to compare these films because that really does force us to think about which film might be better. And I think they're both really important films.
Yes.
And actually, I think the way that they differ, and we'll talk about this more later, but the way that they differ is actually really, really important and says a lot about how queer cinema has changed or queer storytelling has changed in the past 10, 15, 20 years.
Oh, absolutely. And also the sort of when you set a story in a particular landscape or in a particular era, what story you can also tell at that time, because Brokeback Mountain was set in the 1960s to 80s and God's Own Country is a story that's told today, in today's setting, in today's world landscape as well.
See, what's so interesting, when you start to break these films down like that, I mean, at first instance, these are romances, and so they're
sheep, and there's romances, and they're cowboys. Like, really?
Well, so the plot is very simple when you think about it like that. Simple, but actually, when you start to think about the way that the times in which they're set inform the romance, and the way that the landscapes inform the romance, and the way that each film, I think what one of the things that the films do have in common is they have a very few characters who actually facilitate the romance, apart from the two main protagonists. So in God's Own Country, it's Johnny's grandfather and grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Brokeback Mountain, it's the respective wives of both of the protagonists.
Yeah.
So in each film, you have a couple, at most a handful of characters who are kind of facilitating and propelling the action, apart from Jack and Ennis or Georgia and Johnny. And
you say that well. I was just going to say the beautiful Romanian kind of migrant worker that I could never pronounce his name, Jorgen.
Well, Gina, between you and me, when I was speaking to Francis Lee, the director, I called him George.
I was nervous to pronounce it because it's such a beautiful name.
Francis Lee, who was so lovely. He really was a really nice guy. And he didn't correct me. But what he did was in his answer made sure that he said Gheorghe a number of times.
Gheorghe.
So that I got the message loud and clear that the fellow's name is not George.
Well, I hope when you actually spoke to Francis that you actually asked about, my goodness, if you are a vegetarian watching God's Own Country, that's the only kind of alert I give to an audience. It is like they really get involved. Like they really get their hands in there when it comes to dealing with the
animals.
Well,
one of the reviews for God's Own Country, which is, of course, the new film from Francis Lee, is that you can actually smell the mud in this film.
You really can.
That's not a lie, is it?
No, it isn't a lie. And actually, the first kind of, you know, sexual encounter between the two, it is right there, stick in the mud, in the dirt, in the sweat. You really can smell the mud. But when it comes to dealing with animals, maybe don't put lamb on the menu that night is my best tip.
And just vegetables that evening. God's Own Country is, of course, the new film from Francis Lee. We'll be speaking with director Francis Lee later in the program. But first, I think one thing that we really do want to do tonight while we're exploring these two remarkable films and putting them kind of side by side and looking at how they differ and how they inform each other and what they have to say about the way that queer cinema has changed, one thing we do want to do, I think, Gina, you and I, one of our first thoughts was we have to revisit this soundtrack.
Of course we do.
This Academy Award winning. Obviously, lots of controversies when we start to talk about Brokeback Mountain in the context of the Academy.
Well, exactly.
But one of the few awards that it did actually win was the score. And it is a really kind of touching score.
And I kind of introduced you to something just before we came on air with how important this score is and how that phenomenal song, and I'm hoping you're playing the clip that I think, has kind of been put over other kind of bromance films and buddy films to kind of, you know,
it makes a mockery.
It does.
Of
it
the
is.
Love that
They're
this film explores.
Offensive, and that love is actually the score is.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And the love is actually really controversial. Mm. So what kind of love it is and the way that critics and viewers sought to kind of box in this love has become a focus point of a lot of the critical studies that the film has engendered.
Mm.
And we'll be exploring that a little bit later. You know, is this a gay relationship? Is it a straight relationship? Is it a bisexual relationship? relationship, or is it none of these things? That's something that that's a question that Brokeback Mountain raises.
And I think our audience is still trying to figure it out. And this is a film from, what, 2005?
I don't think there's really an answer to that question, whereas I think with God's Own Country, it's a little bit more clear. Again, that's something we'll be exploring later in the program. But before we do, let's have our first sample from the Brokeback Mountain soundtrack.
Take us there, Daniel. We're
this
ready.
Is The Wings. You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, where this evening we are exploring pastoral romance and, of course, Brokeback Mountain.
Well, that score needs no reminder, no introduction. Everyone immediately, those first few kind of...
You know that. Now, the artist is Gustavo Santaolalla. I've probably butchered.
Hey, you've probably done better than I have.
but I mean, that soundtrack, those first few bars, you can tell that's Brokeback Mountain, and you can tell what kind of... Well, the reason I love it is because you can tell what kind of film Brokeback Mountain is from that song. This is a bittersweet, joyous, but also crushing and devastatingly crushing film that... I think as well as any other film that we have depicting a relationship between two people shows how beautiful it is, but also, you know, how bittersweet. And certainly for a lot of people, you know, it's interesting actually, because a lot of the criticisms that came out around the time of this film had to do with the fact that the film doesn't situate itself in amidst LGBT politics, this is just a relationship between two people devoid from the broader political context. And I actually don't think that's true. I think one of the reasons this film is so crushing, Brokeback Mountain is so bittersweet, is because while we don't see, you know, political activism, and while we don't see blatant or patent politics, what we do see is a love affair that is clearly tempered by the political situation. And what happens in the end in this film is very political, I think.
I think it's extremely political. That scene between, before he gets the shirt from the mother that gives it to him, between the father, when he goes to the home after the death, and that scene between him and the father that refuses to acknowledge his son's true self, that's a highly, like, that is really setting the world as it was at that time.
And you know, regardless of what you think about the story in the film and how political that is, there can be no doubt that the film itself was very political. And we'll be discussing some of those political controversies later in the program.
You still haven't gotten over the fact that they didn't...
The snub. Do you know what? It's the kind of annoyance that grows.
Because it wouldn't happen now.
At the time, I thought... I didn't think much of it. Obviously, I was 12 years younger. But now, looking back, I don't think you can compare Crash. Crash is the film that won that year.
I was about to ask,
and
what was the...
Paul Greengrass film. He's a great director, but people will know him from the Bourne trilogy and Captain Phillips, I think, with Tom Hanks. So he, I think, is a really good director, but you just can't compare these two films. And actually, one final point. you mentioned the shirts before.
Yeah.
Did you know that they were auctioned off?
I did, and I think, how much did they get it? I think they got over $1 million.
No, I think 100,000. It was 100,000.
Don't shake the page, Gina, while you're reading it.
That's still a lot of money.
But it was to benefit a children's
variety.
Variety.
$101,000 for two shirts. Wow. I think those are pretty expensive shirts.
I don't know.
More on pastoral romance, Brokeback Mountain, and of course God's Own Country coming up in just a moment, including our interview with the director of God's Own Country, Francis Lee. You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9, the home of queer cinema. And this evening, we are looking at pastoral romances and some of the more notable queer pastoral romances. So, of course, there's a number of pastoral romances. Think All the Pretty Horses, Bridges of Madison County.
Bridges of Madison County.
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep, Clint Eastwood. And I was actually thinking Desert Hearts. That's for you, Betty. lesbian film.
Betty, of course, is the photography here at Joy.
Joy Royalty, I call it.
No, look, we're celebrating, we're looking at pastoral romances this evening because we've just seen here in Australia the theatrical release of God's Own Country, which I think is at the top, queer and non-queer, in terms of films dealing with romances in the countryside, which is essentially what this
film
is.
Which is quite funny, the Call Me By Your Name, which we looked at the other week, which was an Italian, set in the Italian countryside.
But not a pastoral romance. But is it because
there was no, you know,
because they're not riding horses?
And taking care of little sheep, though it was set in the beautiful Italian
film,
landscape.
Let's not go back there because we'll spend all evening talking about it. It's just, that's...
It's a
film that you have to see, and it is having a theatrical release later in the year. But we're looking at God's Own Country. It's the new film from Frances Lee, and it's opened in cinemas around the country now.
Do they call thee Georgie or something?
Georgie.
Whatever, get in.
Our lab needs help.
I could have managed. I've done so far.
Yeah, of course you have. We're not running a charity for worse and strays, lad.
It's perfect for me. It's beautiful here. But lonely, you know? Country, spring is the most beautiful.
Just so you're clear, he's here to work. So I'm on your shoulders now.
What do you want?
I want it to be different. I want to do it.
That was the trailer to God's Own Country. It's the new film from Frances Lee, and it's in cinemas around the country now. And I think the reason that we played that particular trailer is because it really does give you a sense of what this film is like and the sensibility of the film, because there's not a lot of dialogue in this film, is there?
And that's partly what I enjoyed about it.
The appeal.
It was just slow and just glorious to just get lost in the...
It is a slow film.
It's beautiful, though.
But I think it's rewarding.
Yeah.
And I think it goes in a particular direction that not many of us will have expected the film to go in, especially those of us expecting it to be like Brokeback Mountain.
And that's the thing, I don't want to give any spoilers to this film because I really want people to go and actually enjoy the film. And I was just saying to Daniel when that clip was playing, my goodness, you lads are spoilt for choice when it comes to these beautiful films. And that's why I would kind of classify it, if you loved Call Me By Your Name and just the lusciousness of the landscape that story, you're going to enjoy this film.
I don't think they're comparable. I don't think they're in the same league. I think they're very different films.
Yeah. Gosh, my goodness. It's been a long time since I sat down and watched a lesbian film that just let me escape into the beautiful landscape and just space and get lost in
it. We're having this discussion before. I think we've actually seen quite a lot of lesbian films come out this year. I don't think their caliber
has been as good as God's Own Country. Below Her Mouth, absolutely not this film. You know, The First Girl I Loved, not anything like these films that are just beautiful. And like I said, you just get lost in the landscape.
I think there's a really interesting question there. You know, why is that?
Yeah.
Probably not a question that we're going to be able to unpack properly this evening.
I might upset some people, but some other people we haven't upset. We got a lovely message from an avid fan and Joy member, Sebastian, who I think is also sharing another pastoral romance, The Hired Hand, starring Peter Fonda from 1971. Thank you, Sebastian.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. And if you want to message in like Sebastian and let us know what your favourite pastoral romance is, do let us know. The number is 0427JOY949. If you have seen God's Own Country already, you know, we've been giving out tickets to the film.
Thank you. Rialto gave us some tickets to give away a few weeks ago, thanks to them.
So if you've seen the film already, let us know. Do you think the comparisons between God's Own Country and Brokeback Mountain are fair? Mm-hmm. Do you think one of the films is better, even though, you know, it's not necessary to have a winner?
Exactly.
But do you think the comparison is fair? Or, you know, if you are an avid Brokeback Mountain fan, let us know. If you don't like Brokeback Mountain, let us know. Let us know why.
I don't think that exists. Such a person exists.
The number is 0427JOY949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au. You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where tonight we're knee-deep in the world of pastoral romance cinema.
Which you gave us a definition of earlier.
A very muddled definition, I think. I wouldn't call that a definition. It was an attempt. Because this is a really... I think it's a really protean or shifting kind of genre that changes with the times. Because, of course, Brokeback Mountain is classified
Western.
As a neo-Western. It uses traditional tropes and motifs from Western cinema in a modern American setting, which apparently makes it neo-Western. And I think the same could probably be said of God's Own Country, although that does feel more kind of traditional in its landscape, doesn't it? And also because two of the main characters in this film, the kind of supporting cast, are older characters, and they really do a lot to kind of propel the journey of the protagonist, Johnny, in this film. Mm. They are, of course, his grandparents and...
Well, his dad and his grandmother, yeah.
And absolutely. there's a lot in the film about the kind of... the way that the land is kind of passed down from generation to generation and familial responsibility.
And the pressure and what that actually... And that sets Johnny's kind of path.
Yeah.
You know, where is he going to go? Is he going to, you know, take care of the farm and the responsibility that comes with that? Or is he actually going to follow his own path? And very quickly we realise the path that he's on is not one he's happy with. But you, Daniel, were fortunate to sit down with the director, Francis Lee. Now, this is his debut feature.
So he's an actor, Paige.
Oh, okay.
So he's done a lot of acting, mm-hmm. but he's actually directed a number of shorts.
Mm.
But this is his debut feature.
Debut feature.
I think it's remarkable to have this much success with a debut feature, but the film has been critically praised all around the world at all the festivals that it's shown at. And so, I mean, I started by getting him to give us, I guess, a 101 on what this film is actually about. This is what Francis had to say.
So the film is set on the Pennine Hills, which are in Yorkshire in the north of England. And it's around a sheep farm, and Johnny Saxby, who's a lad in his 20s, is running the sheep farm on his own. His dad's had a stroke, his grandma's really old, and he's sacrificed going away to uni or college or getting a job in a town, like all his friends, to keep this farm going for himself and his family. But he's very isolated, and he's shut down emotionally. And very angry about it. And he self-medicates by going to the pub every night and getting plastered or having casual sex with strangers, avoiding intimacy wherever he goes. And it gets to the spring and lambing time, and he can't do all the lambing on his own, so his dad employs a Romanian migrant worker who's working his way around the UK to come and help him. And then the film becomes about their relationship. And what happens between them.
This film is clearly a film about relationships. On the one hand, we have the relationship between Josh and Alec, and clearly that furnishes, I think, clearly the pivotal relationship in the film. But just as important is the relationship between Johnny or Josh and his father. I mean, I think that's a really interesting relationship.
Well, I think it adds context, and it makes us as the viewer understand Johnny and his world. And this world that he comes from.
And the other really interesting thing is the fact that this is set in Yorkshire and that the landscape itself is quite fierce and quite lonely. And I think that does quite a bit to inform the internal state of the characters in this film. Why was it so important for you to set the film in the Yorkshire moors?
Basically because I grew up there and my family lived there. My dad is still a sheep farmer on those hills. The starting point for writing this film was actually the landscape and my reaction to that landscape, because I escaped Yorkshire when I was 20 to move to London to go to college. But I could never get that landscape out of my body. It felt to have got under my skin massively. Mm. And I was trying to figure out my reaction to it, because on one hand, it felt incredibly, an incredibly freeing place, a creative place, a wild place, an expressive place, but it also felt equally to be oppressive and brutal and isolating. And so when I started to think about making film about 4 or 5 years ago, it felt a very natural place to investigate and the people who live and work there.
How do you think the landscape then informs the characters in this film?
I think when we first meet Johnny, he's so angry about being trapped there and isolated and, yeah, I guess lonely. And because he's shut down so emotionally, he can't recognise that there's anything but a harshness to this landscape. And I guess what I wanted to do was that through the relationship with Georgi and him being able to see this land in a slightly different way through Georgi's eyes, it actually makes him realise that he does want to stay. He does want to make this work. He can be happy there, but it's just a slight shift in perspective.
Now, of course, this is a kind of pastoral romance, and that means that comparisons with films like Brokeback Mountain are inevitable, and a lot of critics have compared it to Brokeback Mountain. IndieWire, for instance, says it's a British Brokeback Mountain, but better. How do you feel about the comparisons that we're seeing to films like Brokeback Mountain?
You know, I have to be really honest. I've only seen Brokeback once. when it first came out, but I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a masterpiece of cinema, firstly,
yeah,
and told such a heartfelt story, those two characters. But of course, I think it's a very different film. Mm. You know, in Brokeback, obviously, those two characters can't be together because of society, and they go off and get married to women, and they lead their life secretly, and it ends horribly tragically. And I think God's Own Country is actually less to do. It's not a coming out film. It's not a film with somebody who's necessarily struggling with their sexuality, or the society around them is struggling with their sexuality. Mm. It's about a boy who cannot open up emotionally enough to love and be loved. Mm. And so it's a very personal story and a very personal journey for that character. And I don't want to give too much away, but the endings are very different.
That is Francis Lee, the director of God's Own Country, part one of our chat with him. And I think he responded really well to that question about the comparison between God's Own Country and Brokeback Mountain.
And I think, they are two different films.
Why do you think it is that the films have been compared in this way?
Well, they're two, you know, it's a love story around raising and taking care of sheep. Of course, like quite seriously, the two settings.
Although, let's be honest, God's Own Country is a lot more confronting in the way that it treats raising sheep.
Hence again, vegetarians or anyone about to sit down to dinner, just be mindful
Some
of
really
that.
Confronting
but beautiful.
Yeah.
And there is, like, these actors are actually getting their hands dirty. Mm.
Dirty is softly put.
Softly put. I'm not going to expand on that. But there are some real fundamental differences without having, you know, we don't want to give any spoilers away because we want people to go and watch this film and just enjoy and be taken away
and enjoy it on its own terms.
Yeah, exactly. Look, the comparison that people calling this Brokeback Mountain will invite an audience to go and see it that wouldn't usually.
Yeah, now that's an interesting point, because you were talking to me earlier about correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you said that you didn't think this is a film that females would really warm to.
Can I just say, if this was in one of the kind of program book launches, say we were looking at one of the queer festivals,
yeah,
it's not targeting a lesbian audience,
no,
and it's not targeting a female audience. The
no.
minute you slap the word Brokeback Mountain on it, there is a generation of females that will go, yes, I know how that film felt to me,
yeah,
and they'll go and see it. And look, I can be that is a very big generalization.
So you think it's the distributor that's pushing this comparison to get bums on the seats.
I hope they do, because I hope people do go and see this film and don't just say, it's a gay male love story and it's got nothing for me to relate to, because it's actually a beautiful film.
But
and if that encourages an audience to go and see, and sometimes we do. We do need to say, this is the next Priscilla, or this is the next Muriel, this is the next whatever, to encourage an audience that usually wouldn't go and see an art house film. Remember, we are talking about art house films again.
But, you know, it's interesting because there are reports coming out of the US that the box office there is doing worse than it's done in 15 years. I think the past weekend in cinemas in the US was the lowest grossing weekend on record for the past 15 years, which says something about what audiences think about the continued popcorn generic crap that we're getting in cinemas at the moment. So I think it's really refreshing to see an art house film like this that is so much stronger than a lot of the popcorn crap that we're getting in Hollywood at the moment.
In itself, when you told me those statistics, was really shocking to me, because we know whenever something is going on in the state of the world, people do like to escape and suspend disbelief and usually flock to cinemas. I think
And it's been a political situation in America has been.
States. So that shocks me. But we know people are now flocking to online, you know, subscriber systems, because they're getting these stories. They're getting these richer, more kind of diverse stories. They're now getting that at home.
But I don't think that's a comparison for seeing this kind of film on the big screen.
No.
And I think this is a film that you would actually benefit from seeing on the big screen.
Absolutely.
Because it is so intimate. It's such an intimate film. And that's something
that's a quiet and kind film.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that Francis was talking about in our chat with him. He was talking about it as a very personal film. Mm. And it is a very personal film. It feels very personal. It feels very intimate. Mm. And I think that's so, in a way, ironic, because it is set against this expansive, quite harsh landscape. It's a beautiful landscape, but it's a harsh and isolated landscape. And I think that Francis has been able to imbue this film with such a sense of warmth and that kind of personal touch, I think, says a lot about his capacity as a director.
Look, I think also in comparing the two films, the one thing an audience won't walk out with is the debate of the sexuality of the two characters.
That's true.
Which we do with Brokeback Mountain. I think it's pretty clear what the sexuality is. And in fact, sexuality is almost not a...
It's a non-event.
It's a non-event.
This is not a film about... this is not a coming-out film. No. It's not a film about sexual... Well, it is a film about sexual desire, but it's not a film about sexuality in the kind of identitarian terms that we usually cast sexuality in.
And it's actually, you know, I think some people... I've seen it described as a coming-of-age film. I wouldn't call it that. It's kind of... It's Johnny is kind of lining up to his future, and he's kind of at that crossroad in his life of family duty or his own journey.
I think that's interesting, Gina, because I actually do see this in many ways as a coming-of-age film, not a coming-out film, but this is about, for me, this film is less about the romance between Johnny and George. While it is about that, I think the main tension and interest in this film turns on his development as a character and the way he opens himself up to love, and how that is entirely coterminous with this broader coming of age and this broader maturation. I mean, I think that's where the film is particularly strong, especially in the way that he relates to his father and inherits the kind of responsibility of being the patriarch from...
Reluctantly.
Yeah.
But that comes out of his growing understanding for himself and for love.
And you know... Do you know, that's the other thing I really appreciate about this film, because usually in a film about a same-sex relationship, we would see a complete denial or rejection of the kind of what have traditionally been cast as patriarchal responsibilities. Whereas in this way, Johnny is able to engage in the relationship and at the same time, without giving too much away, redefine on his own terms accepting patriarchal responsibility.
And that's why I think this is such an important, beautiful and kind film.
Yeah.
And
it is a kind
film. And that's why I was saying earlier before we came on air, you boys are so sport for choice to see some beautiful gay male love stories and beautiful, you know, films. As imagine as a young man sitting down and seeing this as a positive love story, seeing Call Me By Your Name as a positive gay male love story. you know, they don't all get a happy ending at the end, but my goodness, what a beautiful story. Imagine as a young man watching this.
Wow.
And
the times they are changing. Jeez, I mean, perhaps we have to have something like Brokeback Mountain first, because Brokeback Mountain was criticized quite a bit for doing exactly that, for breaking our hearts, for having a very defeatist kind of ending. And I think it's a beautiful ending.
Mm.
I think, you know, the film is crushing, but in a really touching way.
Yeah.
But there's no denying that it's not a happy ending.
Yeah.
And perhaps we do need to see for our culture to give us stories with happy endings, perhaps because of our history of subjugation and marginalization and disenfranchisement. I mean, it's not a good thing, but maybe we do need to see those sad endings before we can get the happy ones.
But and by the way, when we say happy ending, looking at these films, we're not saying that, you know, people couple up and they're happy. That's not actually what we're saying by happy ending. We're just saying in the way the character is fine within themselves.
The film's not moralizing.
Exactly, yeah. Saying, oh, once you couple up, you're all good and happy. That's not what we actually mean.
So, I mean, we've touched on it already, but one of the great debates that Brokeback Mountain did spark is whether you need to label a relationship in a film.
Mm.
And I think Ang Lee, Heath Ledger, Jake Gyllenhaal are all on the record as saying that they don't think you can classify the relationship in this film. And the film has been classified as a kind of gay romance, a gay cowboy romance. And there's a particularly poor, I think, interview with Oprah online where she casts it as exactly that. And the whole interview is geared around talking about how could you, Heath and Jake, how could you accept this role knowing what it would do to your career, and how was that first kiss?
Wow.
And it was I felt a really homophobic interview coming from Oprah, which I know is, I should be careful about criticizing Oprah. But I know I think we've moved on from that.
Huge.
I hope we have anyway, but I think it is really interesting to think about how the cast characterized the relationship in the film in Brokeback Mountain. And, you know, here's Heath Ledger responding to some questions that he received about what happens if people don't go and see the film, because actually the question is said because of the disgusting relationship in the film. And here's how Heath Ledger responded.
Oh, well, I don't know. I think I think it's a real shame. I think it's immature, for one, really immature. But I think it's an incredible shame that people go out of their way to discuss or to voice their disgust, I should say, or negative opinions about the way two people wish to love one another. I mean, come on. I don't know, and it doesn't really concern me. I think it's a shame, but I also feel that it's not particularly a story. I mean, it's obviously about two men in love, and it's obviously gay-themed, and it's very easily labeled, but unfortunately people are very quick in life to label something that they're uncomfortable with. The pure fact of it is it transcends a label. It's human. It's a story of two human beings, two souls that are in love. It's like, get over the fact that there's two men. That's the point. We're showing that love between two men is just as infectious and emotional and strong and pure as it is with heterosexual love. And if you can't understand that, then just don't go see the movie. It's okay. You know, we don't care. It's like, deal with it in your own private life. Don't voice it out, you know? It's like, we don't want to know, and it's really boring and old and whatever, you know? But we're very proud of it, and I think it's transcended that, you know? And so, you know.
That was Heath Ledger, I think, kind of muddling his way through a response to the way that the relationship in this film is cast. And I think what he says is actually right, that this film is not actually about casting a relationship as gay or bi or straight. I think that the characters are very different, so some arguments can be made about Jake or Jack's character that can't be made about Ennis or Heath's character. I think that character is probably a little bit more nuanced and shirks identity labels a little bit more than Jack or Jake Gyllenhaal's character. But I really don't think it actually helps the way we think about this film to label the relationship as gay, straight or bi.
And especially, I think I remember reading somewhere at the time, I remember reading that the word gay in the landscape of the world these protagonists were in was not a word they would have even known.
Probably not.
And so the only time, I think the word queer is the only word, you know, I'm not queer or nor am I after their first sexual encounter. So it's kind of almost having to remember the world these protagonists are falling in love in is such a... Yeah.
It's a different world. And a very different world to God's Own Country as well.
And an interview 11 years ago with Oprah that, again, is a very different world to the one we are living in now.
Yeah, we're not going to have time to play that interview tonight, or a clip that we had prepared from that interview. But what we will do, I think, is put it on our Facebook page. So you check out the Outtakes Facebook page, facebook.com/ Joyful Outtakes. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information there about the latest in queer cinema, but we will pop a clip of an interview that Heath and Jake Gyllenhaal did with Oprah. And I really hope that journalism has moved on a bit and that the way we think about... I think we have too, actually.
Some things that are in the media at the moment might make you think not, but I think, yeah. In fairness, we have actually moved
on. I think we have too, I actually
audiences
agree.
Have transcended. Now, but you still got to chat to Frances Leigh. You're very lucky.
So we were talking a bit about the coming of age, and I know Gina, you don't see this as a coming of age film, but I think that segues perfectly into this next part of our interview. I do want to pick up on something that you said a moment ago. You said this isn't a coming out story, and I don't think it is, but I do think there's an element of coming of age here. Certainly with Johnny, there's clearly a journey here, and it's clearly a journey of maturation, and I think that manifests in the way that he conducts his intimate relations, but also, as we've briefly touched on, the way that he navigates the relationship with his father.
I think I was fascinated, really, by somebody, you know, meeting somebody at a point in their life where things weren't good, and where they're in that transitional period almost between being, I guess, an adolescent and the grown-up, and that journey that you go on, and also just that journey of somebody who's discovering themselves emotionally and feeling like they are worthy of love and respect, and the transition that they then go through.
The performances that you manage to elicit in this film are extraordinary, especially Josh. I think the way that he carries this film is remarkable, and clearly he would have had to make himself very vulnerable to that process.
Yeah, I think you're right. Josh is an extraordinary actor, and as a person is the total antithesis of Johnny.
Really?
You know, Johnny is, as you know, and as people will know when they see the film, he's very closed off. He's very emotionally repressed. He's angry. He's a bit of a tragic figure at the beginning, really. Mm. Whereas Josh is, you know, funny and bright and open and smiley and generous. You know, he's the absolute antithesis of Johnny. They don't look the same, sound the same, or have the same emotional range at all. Mm. And so, but Josh is a very transformative actor. You know, it's something. He's one of the rare breed of actors who can be a shapeshifter, who can make themselves very, very different. Mm. And so, to help that or to get that performance, I started to work with both boys. And we built these characters from scratch, from the moment they were born until the moment we first discovered them in the film. And we investigated them in such detail, you know, not just emotionally or through their relationships or their families, but on practical levels, you know, right down to did they have sugar in their tea. So when the boys came to the location for the rehearsals proper, they were so immersed in these characters. You know, they also had to go and do intensive farming training because I knew that I didn't want any hand doubles or stunt doubles or any fakery in this film at all. So they both went and worked on farms for 2 weeks before the shoot, and they worked proper shifts.
I have to say, some of those farming scenes are, at certain points, difficult to watch.
Yeah, it's interesting because for me, growing up in that environment and living back there now, you know, I'm fascinated by that cycle of life that you see very vividly on a farm. You know, birth, life, death, it happens every day. Mm. And I wanted to depict that very truthfully and authentically. So when you see, Georgi birthing a lamb in the film, that is Alex birthing that lamb. When you see Josh doing the internal examination of the cow, that is him doing it, you know, and they learn such great proficiency to be able to carry it off.
And while we are talking about the cast, we can't not note how good Gemma and Ian are.
Yeah, I was so lucky, you know, they're great actors, huge body of work behind themselves. Mm. They showed such trust to come and work with me and delivered these detailed, subtle, you know, authentic performances.
I think in many ways the film really does turn on those four solid performances. And I think that comes back to this central notion of family as well. Why was it, because you clearly have a personal connection to the landscape, that family was such an important theme in this film? Why did you want to look at family in so much depth here?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, first of all, I should say this is not my family.
Sure.
And I'm not Johnny. None of these things happen to me, and this is not a personal autobiographical story. I mean, I love the dynamics of a family and all those unspoken things that happen in families, and those nuances and complexities of the relationship, and also sometimes difficulties, and how you sort those out. How do you investigate those? Also, I love this idea of, you know, the generation, the land being passed through generations, this idea that farmers live on the same piece of land for years and years and years, and it gets passed down the line, and almost that there's no choice in the matter, that, you know, the kids automatically will become farmers and work on the land.
As a way maybe of wrapping up, Francis, I'd love to know, we've talked about the comparisons that are being made to Brokeback Mountain. That's obviously, off the top of my head, I think maybe 15 years old now. So clearly times have changed. For you, as a kind of emerging filmmaker, do you think that the landscape of cinema has changed in that time?
Again, that's such an interesting question. Personally, for me, I didn't really think about it. Mm. I was very blinkered and focused on this story and these characters. I think this year, 2017, is extraordinary in terms of exceptional films that at the heart of them have a same-sex relationship or a trans character. I really don't know why it is, but these films that, you know, like God's Own Country or Call Me By Your Name or Moonlight winning the Oscar, or you've got Fantastic Woman about a trans character that was in Berlin, a wonderful independent American movie called Beach Rat. You've got all these incredibly strong films that are dealing in some way with same-sex relationships or trans characters. And I think that for the first time in a lot of years, we've got a lot of choice. You know, it's not just the one exceptional film that peaks its head above the parapet of the mainstream. There's lots to choose from. Lots of different stories, different representations, and it feels an incredibly rich year, and I'm so glad we can celebrate that.
Has been a rich year.
Hasn't it?
My goodness. In gay male cinema, ladies, come on. It's time we start.
Well, hey, Gina, it's been a rich year in what we might loosely term lesbian cinema.
It has been.
The quality, I agree with you, the quality of the film's not been as good.
Look, there have been different stories, and to give credit to something like Below Her Mouth, it was the first time we were seeing quite full-on explicit lesbian cinema. The fact that it was kind of not my... Okay, we won't.
Who wants to find out more about those kind of films, do take a look at our podcast page, because we have interviews. April Mullen is the director of Below Her Mouth. That interview's online.
And you can see that through, you know, those
online streaming.
Online streaming. To see, you know, this film, I mean, you were so fortunate to speak to the director, Francis Lee. Independent cinemas are now, you know, this is out there. I encourage people to go and see this film.
You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9, the home of queer cinema, where this evening we've been looking at pastoral romances and in particular asking, can you compare Brokeback Mountain to God's Own Country?
Answer is no. Go watch it and make the decision for yourself.
Look, a big thank you to Frances Lee for joining us on Outtakes this week. It's a really solid film, so go and check it out. That's it, Gina, for another week of Outtakes. You're listening to Joy.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.